Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Tonight I'll talk about another player, one of the many players, the big players, who profoundly helped the organization which runs the world and who's dead now, who played a massive part, along with other big players in the global agenda. They all belong to the same global institutions. They networked with each other. They attended the same global meetings to decide the future of humanity, the future of how to handle and manage billions of people across the world in a global society and under eventually a global government on behalf of the elite that already owned the moneyed system and the commercial system of the time, and still do, by the way, their descendants do. So you find, if you go back into the writings, they put out copious writings at one time when the public were not so aware of what was going on. They were kept in the dark on purpose, of course, but they did publish a lot of books for their own kind to read, and anybody in the general public who was into what was really happening, why things were happening, why culture was managed and changing all the time, being directed to the changes, why it was happening, because it's only there you find the answers as to why it's happening. And tonight I'll touch on Arthur Koestler, who wrote The Ghost in the Machine and many other books too. He belonged to the same institutions as his Bertrand Russell and many others, Aldous Huxley, and they're all friends with each other. And you'll find that they all belonged to the intelligence services during World War II and often afterwards as well. But they definitely all afterwards were into the global agenda, meeting at world meetings, United Nations. They worked with university faculties in the study and of behaviorism, for instance, and how to modify the human being to make them complacent, compliant citizenry that would basically be happy. As children are kept happy, don't tell them much what's really happening, keep them happy, and that's all they'll need, basically, while they can be managed and exploited too. And I've touched on many of the big players down through the ages, right up to the present time, in fact, but Koestler was important as well, because he had a tremendous ego. They all had tremendous egos, these characters, thinking they're scientific establishment that helped to run the world and shape the whole future, fashion, culture, even music and so on. They all touched on the same things. So I'll read a bit of one of his books called The Ghost in the Machine. Now, I've touched on it before in the past. You can go into the archive section at cuttingthroughthematrix.com and you can go through the old talks I've given years ago on some of these players. But if you don't understand the past, you won't understand the present, because the past is still going on. Many of the agendas to do step-by-step cultural changes towards a definite goal have already taken place in our lifetimes. These guys, many of them are long dead, but it's still going on. Step-by-step, incrementally, they knew how to do it. And they have more to come yet that was still devised in the changes, devised in their age as well. So he talks in The Ghost in the Machine on page 333 about even birth control and altering women's behavior as well. I've mentioned this so many times because, you see, biochemistry was to be very, very important in the future. And it became that way even before I was born. And right up to the present time, there are ongoing researches into biochemistry and how it can alter human behavior, not just physical appearance, which it does too, by the way, but human behavior as well. And I've mentioned that Charles Galton Darwin wrote a book called The Next Million Years, where he goes into it too and talks about putting hormones in the food, the water, and various other methods of inserting these hormonal changes into society that would affect their behavior, make men less aggressive, and make them behave themselves and be complacent, or as even Aldous Huxley said, perhaps at times when they shouldn't be so complacent and at peace when they're being used, for instance, they would mind. Today we have masses of entertainment to keep you just like sucking a lollipop all day long, and people, that's all they do now on their cell phones, etc. they're entertained to death, literally, in a sense. But getting back to the Ghost in the Machine, Huxley Talks just touches on, at the top of the page, it touches on, after a long chapter on to alter the hormonal balance in women and so on, he says we may be able to prevent the demotic apocalypse by interfering with women's estrous cycle. We cannot cure our paranoid disposition by putting additional wiring circuits into our brains. They're already working in Tavistock by doing just that, by putting wire in the brain, and they were literally hardwired to various buttons and so on. But he says, but we may be able to achieve a cure, or at least a significant improvement, by directing research into the required channels. Now, what's the cure he's talking about? The cure for what is also important. Well, it's the wild part in human nature. We're all basically, we all have so-called animal instincts. These are primal drives of procreation to keep the species going, etc. Everyone is subject to it, of course. And he talks about the need to control population. Big agenda. All of the big players mentioned heavily population control, because it's always been on their minds. It really took on after Darwin came along. He was part of the same agenda to replace the old religions and so on with scientific dictatorship, you might say, or oligarchy. Aldous Huxley talks on that too, where he said that he and his family members belonged, and Julian Huxley's brother said the same thing, they belonged to the scientific elite. He didn't mean just in chemistry and so on. He meant the behavioral sciences, all of the sciences, to manipulate society, manipulate them, and give the culture which the people would unfortunately follow. That's how easy it is to lead the people, by putting out stars in front of them. They follow what the stars do, and so on. The public have no idea that stars can be completely talentless, because the machinery of making a star through propaganda, massive publicity, is all you'd really need today. It's all you really need. And it's been that way for an awful long time. Talent has comes down the ladder, actually. And why they pick some of the people, it's up to you to decide to make them stars. But you find that he goes into this whole thing, too, of altering the estrous cycle in women by adding certain hormones which would interfere with other main hormones, etc. It would change behavior. It would change even the psychology, you might say, of the subjects as well. Maybe even make them more aggressive. Well, we've seen that in women too. And men become a lot more passive, a lot of them. But anyway, it says here, mutating into the future. In 1961... these are ongoing studies and meetings that they have. The University of California, San Francisco Medical Center organized a symposium of control of the mind. Control of the mind. At the first session, Professor Holger Heiden of Gothenburg University made headlines in the San Francisco press, although the title of his highly technical paper was called Biochemical Aspects of Brain Activity, was hardly designed to appeal to the popular press. That's how they mislead the public too, and keep the press off their backs by giving it a very amorphous title, really, something that's very vague, and people don't turn up. But if they put down control of the mind, it'd be a different story altogether. This is the passage which created the sensation, as quoted below, and the reference to Kessler himself is explained by the fact that I was a participant of the symposium. And this is what came out did leak out into some of the press, even though they took precautions, as I say. In considering the problem of control of the mind, the data give rise to the following question. Would it be possible to change the fundamentals of emotion by inducing molecular changes in the biologically active substances in the brain? The RNA, in particular, is the main target for such a speculation. Now, they were already doing massive tests. There had been since even the early 50s on all of these things. So they weren't speculating as much as he made out to be that they were. But he says, RNA is the main target for such speculation. Since a molecular change of the RNA may lead to a change in the proteins being formed, one may phrase the question in different words to modify the emphasis. do the experimental data presented here provide means to modify the mental state by specifically induced chemical changes? Results pointing in that direction have been obtained. And the work was carried out by using a substance called tricyanoaminoprine, it's called aminoprine. And it goes on to say here in the article, here at our disposal, to be used wisely or unwisely, is an increasing array of agents that manipulate human beings. It's now possible to act directly on the individual to modify his behavior instead of, as in the past, indirectly through modification of the environment. Now, modification of the environment has a tremendous impact. You can do that by creating social approval and social disapproval. It's used heavily in universities. They tell you what not to talk about, what's taboo, and they can train the people so easily to turn on a person who just uses a word or asks a question about a certain topic that's completely taboo and off limits. We're trained all the time by the environment in which you live or work and so on. It's quite easy to institutionalize such taboos throughout society, and it's done heavily today. He goes on to say, this then constitutes a part of what Aldous Huxley has called the final revolution. So here's chemical agents which can biologically manipulate human beings, you see. He says, I must comment on the last paragraph in this quotation. Huxley was haunted by the fear that this final revolution brought about by the combined effects of drugs and the mass media, because they wanted to use pharmacology in a big, big way across entire society. They've been pretty well successful, even grabbing the children when they're young, creating diseases that don't exist to do with their mind, and drugging them too. But he says, within a generation or so, for entire societies, a sort of painless concentration camp of the mind in which people will have lost their liberties and enjoyment of a dictatorship without tears. Now, the dictatorships Huxley was talking about, of course, was the scientific dictatorship that Bertrand Russell vastly promoted, greatly promoted. He was all for this scientific dictatorship, which he said, this is Russell, Russell said, he says a scientific dictatorship would be incredibly cruel because it wouldn't bother with human emotions or pity, etc., etc. Tremendously cruel. I would see people, and he was all for this whole thing anyway. But getting back to the article here, a painless concentration camp of the mind in which people have lost their liberties and the enjoyment of a dictatorship without tears. In other words, the state of affairs described in Brave New World. As an antidote, this is interesting, Huxley advocated the use of mescaline and other psychedelic drugs to guide us along the eightfold path towards cosmic consciousness, mystic enlightenment, and artistic creativity. Now, even though he said, Kessler said, he's disagreeing with Huxley on this point of using these drugs, don't get him wrong. You understand, the big agencies that run the world are employed with the think tanks and all the laboratories, etc., controlled studies and behaviorism on populations that don't even know they're being studied, have been going on for an awful long time. And what they'll do at the top, they'll take maybe five or six different ways that they could think could possibly work in modifying people's behavior. And the ones who are all friends at the top in these circles are given massive grants to carry out experiments on the general population to see which ones work. They don't necessarily agree with each other, and they're allowed to say so to each other, but they're still all friends. So you, on the one hand, you have Kessler with his idea of how it should work, and you have also Huxley with his. Remember, there's a lot of egos involved, as I said before, with these people who are the movers and shakers, and they spearhead investigation into controlling all humans in every possible way. So he disagrees with them on using what became very popular at that time, was mescaline, the LSD, things like that, drop out, etc., and drop in, and blah, blah, blah. All the stuff that came out with the hippie movement, it was all manufactured by associate think tanks and CIA funding too, of course, to create the hippie generation, the dropout generation, and so on, which worked awfully well. A lot of folk dropped out of college, universities, Some of them didn't even make it to college. They were already so far gone with their minds being blitzed with LSD that they were out of action for many, many years, some permanently. But they also found out that such a society could not be productive. Because when you're stoned all the time, you don't care about going to work, you don't worry about getting to work, you don't worry about anything eventually, as long as you can get lots and lots of drugs. You find the same thing being instituted at the same time, of course, with big pharmacology and the medical associations promoting all of these particular tranquilizers, which they could drug the populations to. And they targeted mainly housewives initially, in Britain and other countries too. I think back in the 70s at one time, tranquilizers like Librium and Valium, they said that a lot, I think it was 70-odd% of the women at that time were either had taken it or were being prescribed it for anxiety or depression or whatever. In other words, they felt life was passing them by, because the cultural blitz through all media at that time was everyone should have a job, have a function, have a career, etc. If you were in the home, you were a nobody, you were looked down upon, you were a third-class person, and so on. You should be out having excitement, even having affairs. That was heavily promoted too, long before then, of course. It was promoted even back in the late 1800s by H.G. Wells, and all through his life afterwards. And so we've been experimenting with for an awful long time. But he says here in his book, he said he was an admirer of Huxley's personality and work. In the last years, I profoundly disagreed with him, and the points of disagreement will help clarify the issue. He said, in Heaven and Hell, praising the benefits of mescaline, Huxley offered this advice to modern man in search of his soul. Knowing as he does what are the chemical conditions of transcendental experience, the aspiring mystic should turn for technical help to the specialists in pharmacology, in biochemistry, in physiology and neurology. It's very interesting. It says, now this is precisely what I do not mean by the positive uses of psychopharmacology. In the first place, experimenting with mescaline or with LSD-25 does involve serious risks. But quite apart from this, it's fundamentally wrong and naive to expect that drugs can present the mind with gratis gifts, put into it something which is not already there. Neither mystic insights nor philosophic wisdom nor creative power can be provided by pill or injection. The psychopharmacist cannot add to the faculties of the brain, but he can at best eliminate obstructions and blockages which impede their proper use. The key to all of this is that the big boys themselves, going along with the Darwinian school, claimed that man had gone wrong somewhere in his evolution. It's interesting they didn't want to change themselves at the top, including all the scientific elite, but they wanted to remain wild men, as Charles Galton Darwin said quite plainly in his book The Next Million Years, because they would be steering and guiding the planet Earth, basically, the culture, everything, productivity and so on. Training the public constantly from generation to generation, updating them for changes. But they themselves would remain wild men, since they were the captains of the ship. They could interfere with their own faculties of reasoning, etc. In a crisis situation, they would need those faculties. But the general population, he said, would have the decisions made by the state. All decisions would be made by the state. Hence the massive increase in social work departments, etc., etc., etc. They make all your decisions for you. Kessler goes on to say in another page, he says, I'm aware that control of the mind and manipulating human beings have sinister undertones. Who is to control the controls, manipulate the manipulators? Assuming that we succeed in synthesizing a hormone which acts as a mental stabilizer on the lines indicated, how are we to propagate its global use to induce the beneficial mutation? Are we to ram it down people's throats or put it into the tap water? The answer seems obvious. No legislation. This is important because it ties in with your addiction to internet, pornography, food, all kinds of addictions. You may call them addictions if you want to. But really, there's something that makes people feel pleasant in an era of unpleasant happenings and so on. But since the answer seems obvious, no legislation, no compulsory measures were needed to persuade the Greeks and Romans to partake of the juice of the grape that gives joy and oblivion. Sleeping pills, pep pills, tranquilizers have, for better or worse, spread across the world with a minimum of publicity or official encouragement. It wasn't really done officially through parliaments, because parliaments are low in the totem pole, you understand. It was done by the agencies assigned by parliaments to do all this kind of stuff, and the special branches of secret services and so on. They spread because people liked their effects and even accepted unpleasant or harmful after effects. Not quite true, because I've gone into the history of the drug introduction into society and how bags of LSD were thrown over university walls across Britain and other countries too to get it all started. And many, many years afterwards, they can always tell you after the event because it's achieved their effect. We find that top promoters of the use of LSD, for instance, like Timothy Leary, were actually on the payroll of the CIA. He traveled across the world's universities promoting, encouraging this fantastic use of LSD. We also had the big culture creators for the rock bands, etc., heavily promoting the use of drugs through music and pop rock. The revolution, supposedly, for the young, who really did believe it was their revolution, because, and they were managed all of the way in every single iota of it. They were completely managed. They had no idea that the ideas, even the songs often, were done by much, much older people in a completely different class than they'd ever see. But it says here, basically people would like something, right? Now, you'll like a lot of things that will decrease misery, for instance, in a time of tremendous hardship. It's interesting, too, that in the Soviet Union, often outside Moscow, you'd have lineups and queues for food when it was hard at times, bad harvest or whatever, but you never had problems getting vodka, cheap vodka. Then the big boys understand this. Don't forget, the Soviet Union was part of the big experiment, too, and well funded by the West. So they've always used various kind of drugs to pacify the public in times of incredible hardships and financial troubles, etc., etc. But it says here, they've spread across because people like their effect, the drugs and so on, and even accepted unpleasant or harmful after effects. A mental stabilizer would produce neither euphoria, nor sleep, nor masculine visions, nor cabbage-like equanimity. It would, in fact, have no noticeable specific effect except in promoting cerebral coordination and harmonizing thought and emotion. In other words, restore the integrity of the split hierarchy. Its use would spread because people like feeling healthy rather than unhealthy in body or mind. It would spread as vaccination has spread and contraception has spread, not by coercion, but by enlightened self-interest. And of course, this is going into behaviorism and those who control behavior, because you might think it's your self-interest, but you're generally wrong in all the things they promote. What they mean too by a stabilizer is to subjugate basically your wild, your natural survival instincts into a cooperative, placid society for the general public. That's what he means by this too. These guys, remember, we speak with the American Indians, you see, forked tongues. One for their own group and one for the outer group, the esoteric and exoteric and combined. The first noticeable result would perhaps be a sudden drop in the crime and suicide rate in certain regions and social groups where the pill would become fashionable, the contraceptive pill. From here on, the developments are as unpredictable as the consequences of James Watt's or Pasteur's discoveries had been. Some Swiss canton might decide, after a public referendum, to add a new substance to the chlorine in the water supply. Well, we've got stacks of things. It's not just fluoride. Fluoride's a big one that does affect stabilization because it makes you pretty well dumb, actually, if you take too much of it. It shouldn't be there at all. And it's used widely, and its studies have constantly gone on for the upper elite, which are never published for you to read. But it's all, but we can see the fallout in society too. Anyway, it says for a trial period, they could use another drug along with chlorine, and other countries might follow their example, you see. And even says there might even be international fashions created amongst for the young, etc., etc. But it says here on another page, but we are a mentally sick race. Mentally sick, he calls the public mentally sick, and as such deaf to persuasion. It's been tried from the age of the prophets to Albert Schweitzer, and the results have been, as Swift said, that we have just enough religion to make us hate, but not enough love to love each other. That applies to all religions, theistic or secular, whether taught by Moses or Marx or Mao Zedong, and Swift's anguished cry, not die here in a rage like a poisoned rat in a hole, has acquired an urgency as never before. He goes on to say that nature has let us down, God seems to have left the receiver off the hook, and time is running out. To hope for salvation to be synthesized in a laboratory may seem materialistic, crankish, or naive, but to tell the truth, there is a Jungian twist to it, Carl Jung. It says, for it reflects the ancient alchemist's dream to concoct the elixir vitae. What we expect from it, however, is not eternal life, nor the transformation of base metals into gold, but the transformations of Homo maniacus into Homo sapiens. When man decides to take his fate into his own hands, that possibility will be within reach. In other words, total tranquilization and various methods, all combined, behavioristic methods, etc., and persuasion and neuroscientific prompting, as they say, Pavlovian responses and conditioning, they're all being used against you and have been your whole life long, all from early school all the way through education and into your workplace, because the media gives you it in so many different ways. They tell you who to hate, who is wrong by saying something. They tell you, and it sinks into you. If you mention certain things and question certain things, you're a bad person. Never discount the effects that you get through indoctrination, through fiction. Never discount it, because it's incredibly effective. When you identify with the characters in a movie or whatever it happens to be, then you, or drama, you will actually start to emulate what is said. Children especially, they mimic what they hear and see, even the cuss words, etc. That's why Hollywood put them in a long time ago. Remember, the Frankfurt School, for instance, were dedicated to destroying completely the culture of the West, right down to promoting all modern arts, which are basically dehumanizing, they're depressing to look at. All beauty was to be destroyed. All beauty. And that's part of it too. So, and then again, when the experts keep telling this is a great painting, you're supposed to parrot it and say so. The ones who are easy, the real followers, will say the same thing. They want to be in the group that says it's fantastic. You find the same in music. You don't really have to sell all the records to get a number one hit. What you do, first of all, is promote it and say it is number one by the machinery that creates the whole industry. And you'll believe it and you won't buy the record just to be in with everybody else. So I've got that, so I'm cool, you see. So all of these things work awfully well. Never discount persuasion by your ability or your instinct to follow what you think are people, or even hero figures, you might say. Hero figures. And role models. So never discount fiction, because that's when you really are wide open to suggestion. When they promote something and they tell you this is a bad thing to say or think or even discuss. And they'll make the character who does say those things or discuss them the most nastiest character of all, you see. And that's how your behavior is modified, when you don't question everything. If you can't question everything, you'll never get to truth, obviously. But you see, the big boys don't believe that you have the capacity to handle truth. You're too primitive and emotional when you get truth. That's what they say. Well, a fantastic way for an elitist group to criticize you for finding out what's really going on, and hopefully to silence you in the process. None of these authors have self-doubt whatsoever as to their particular primitive and base behavior. And some of them that were the most foulest of people privately you could possibly ever meet. And still are. Very arrogant, completely elitist, and they have no problems discussing amongst themselves things which they make taboo for you to discuss.
When you go into Charles Galton Darwin stuff, and after Koestler stuff, after Koestler again was hired as a propagandist through fiction at one time to basically push for, or help the left along, because they run both sides, left and right. And Koestler, who had worked for Stalin as an officer at one time, he helped oversee the great famine of the Ukraine where they starved millions to death. He thought it was just wonderful, and he admits that in one of his books. He said it was historical necessity at the time. That's how a psychopath rationalizes mass murder. But then Koestler went over to New York and he worked for the United Nations, and he came out with a book called The Ghost in the Machine, which is a term that's used often for what are you? You know, who are you? Are you just a bunch of protoplasmic cells and synapses and neurons and so on? Or is there something else to you? The complete you, the sentient you, the individual you, that's what he meant. And his whole job at the United Nations was to find ways of eliminating you, the ghost, to get, again, for world peace. And he went through all the different factions working at the United Nations. One was trying to do it surgically, like lobotomies. One was trying to lobotomize specific parts of the brain by injecting chemicals and specific viruses, altered viruses, that would target what would be uptaken by the brain, by the receptors, and burn out certain parts that give you higher intellect and even aggressive parts, or the parts really which give you your self-survival instincts. And he came out with all this, and in the last chapter he thought it was just a wonderful idea, and once again there'd be world peace.
Eugenics is a big, big part of controlling peoples. Eugenics. I've gone over before how the United Nations, after Koestler talked about this, that he worked for a while with the United Nations and different branches of special health and medical departments were working on ways to lobotomize parts of the brain, the part that make you you, because that's your wild part. You see, the part that has your survival instincts. And if they could simply knock that out and make people more amenable to persuasion and to being guided by their betters, then that would be fine. They had to do this for world peace. And they did discuss different ways to do it. Pharma, of course. And specialized types of drugs could literally piggyback on enzymes and zip up to your brain to the place where they would be located for receptors and alter you from there. Other ones would simply be injected into you and target specific areas of the brain and so on and so on. But he said in the last chapter it had to be done because they need world peace, and man was the problem, you see. And it's true when they say man. Men had to be put out the picture, and they have been. It's quite the world that they're bringing in, though, the one that they've been talking about for such a long time, the controlled society, the managed society, the scientifically designed and run society that even Quigley talks about, and all the hopes and dreams of those who talk about bringing in world peace. When you go into their talks about world peace, you have to understand how they determined they would get to world peace. And since they decided that the violence and so on was really inbuilt within man himself, they'd have to alter man. And they discussed this at many, many think tanks. Some of them wrote books about it that work for think tanks under the United Nations. And after Koestler wrote the book The Ghost in the Machine, the ghost really is you, the kind of wild you, the one that's has got survival capabilities, which we normally submerge in a pacified, law-abiding society. But he found ways to get around that chemically by injecting you with stuff to make sure you didn't get violent back.
Yes, it's even more insidious. They They have done experiments. Arthur Koestler, who worked for MI5 and MI6 during the war, was also attached to think tanks in New York and experimental scientific laboratories for the United Nations, and he said that they'd already done experiments on lobotomizing that part of your brain which makes you you, uniquely you. He called it the ghost in the machine. And he said there's different techniques. One of them was a delivery of chemicals to the brain via inoculation. It was very successful. And he also said, too, you won't need your survival capabilities because, again, the state will be making all your decisions for you.
Well, that's why they called it the Fabian Society, too, after Fabius, you know, the general in Rome, who said that rather than hit people head-on and have conflict, you simply do it a long way around, subvert it quietly and slowly, and do it in a long-term motion, basically. And that's what all the early founding members of the Fabian Society said, too. It might take them 100 years to achieve this, or even longer, but eventually they would achieve it. But as I say, they brought in members like Arthur Koestler was the guy who wrote The 13th Tribe, Darkness at Noon, and so on. These were all novels put out, well, at least the Darkness at Noon was a novel, and he worked with MI5 too. But Arthur Koestler wrote books to bring you around to the struggle of society, the struggle through all the terrible things that were happening, without saying, yeah, we caused all these terrible things to happen so that you'll come to us when we say we're going to champion you and get you out of the mess. So it's a perfect technique. They cause the problems and then offer you the solutions over and over again. And when you're struggling, you grab the lifeline and you end up in a worse mess.
So this is the agenda for the future, is to be a totally controlled society. Step by step, through different phases of it, including the chip, is only one phase, until they go through genetic engineering into transhumanism. And if you look up the websites on the big transhumanist societies, look at them. Again, heavily founded by the foundations, stacked with professors of all kinds and researchers of all kinds, all the top people, where they plan to eventually, over the course of the century, bring in a new type of human society. They'll be enhanced, they call it. But when you tie that in with the Loyola science meeting to do with the chip, they might be very physically superior, but in the Loyola University, they say there'll be the end of individuality as you know it, because once this chip is inserted, you're talking about inside the brain.
Yes, indeed. Utterly, yep. Borg, to use the Star Trek, it's you will be assimilated and resistance is futile.
Yes, they said it will be impossible for anyone to think of themselves as a separate, distinct individual. That will be gone. And so therefore the elite will have achieved their objective. Now remember, the elite themselves will not use this chipping technique on themselves. That's written into their own documentation. Arthur Koestler mentioned that he worked, now it's declassified, there's books out on it, he worked for MI5 and 6. We find the writings by Charles Galton Darwin, the grandson of Charles Darwin, in the 1980s, he wrote the book, Million Years. He also said, we, the elite, will not change ourselves. We must retain our ability for self-preservation, but the masses won't need it because the state will be making all the decisions for them. It's very arrogant. To be honest with you, there's no reason why they can't pull it off. They do need our compliance. That's the only thing that they need, is our compliance. And the public have all of these ideas marketed to them to make them familiar with them, but they don't tell you all of the story. Survival here depends on our ability to want to retain individuality. What's happened to the public? I can't ever get around the writings by Arthur Koestler and others who were initially financed by MI5 to write novels like H.G. Wells was before it was MI5 to try and persuade the public through fiction to change their ways in a certain predetermined direction. And then he eventually went into non-fiction, as they all were told to do as well. Wells said that the fictional propaganda was taking too long to change the values of society into the new values that they have planned you to take. And entertainment's a fantastic way to do it. Again, emotive topics. You identify with the characters. But the nonfiction of Kessler, he talked about ways to lobotomize that part of the brain that they were working on with United Nations groups for world peace. He says it was essential to do this for world peace. Now, what do they mean by world peace? Whose peace? He said they could use chemical means, viral means, through something in the water, in the food, injections, bring world's peace. Remember the definition, by the way, or one of the definitions of communism, and their definition of peace, I should say, was they defined it as the absence of all opposition. This is a new world order. It's a new world order, a new system. And it's post-democratic. That's what they say at the Club of Rome, one of the big think tanks. Post-democratic. Democracy is too cumbersome for them at the top to get the agenda through. Therefore, they've bypassed it and they've gone through democracy and we're post-democratic. If we don't do something with these guys soon, believe you me, they will eradicate us. There's no doubt about it. They've given us enough information from the United Nations and from all their big think tanks and their major media publications as what they're clearly going to take us as a society of massive depopulation, forced depopulation, etc. And by the way, they're now in charge of all of your food. They have been poisoning you all along with your food, with the inoculations and stuff in your water. After Kessler, another guy who worked at the United Nations, wrote a book on it, The Ghost in the Machine, he says we were finding ways to lobotomize that part of the brain that makes you an individual. Once that's eliminated, eradicated, you'll be a happy person, content, and he says you'll cause the system no trouble. That's what the sort of things they're working on and published by guys who work on these projects. It says we can put it in the water and through inoculations or in their food. Well, guess what? They're doing all of it. These guys mean business. Politics is just a front. That's all politics is. It's a complete front. When all the top guys are picked in advance at the Bilderberger meetings, they're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations, regardless of what party they belong to at the top. Professor Carl Quigley documented that so well in Tragedy and Hope. So we're not run by any kind of democracy, but we are run by a definite pre-planned agenda, a world agenda, and people must go into the United Nations and look at Agenda 21 for the 21st century. They must look into the think tanks put out by the US military and the British military. I have them up my archive section on my website, 90-page reports on what they see for the future. Massive rioting starting in 2010, food shortages because there are five agribusinesses controlling your entire food supply now. They're going to use food as a weapon, and they're going to have flash mobs, and they even say that in the Western Hemisphere they will be using neutron bombs, literally battlefield neutron bombs, on mass demonstrations in the future. These guys mean business, and we better get to work, and we better be prepared to deal with business, because to be honest with you, they're ruthless at the top. I cannot see any negotiation.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.